Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Next up, we're going to hear the latest on BCANs from our friend, Neil Boulanger. So what's the latest with BCANs?
Hi, Cam. Well, we've been quite busy as usual. We've been doing a lot of work in the community with our membership, Indigenous persons and families living with disabilities, and we're preparing for our gathering, which is coming up in November of 2020 during Indigenous Disability Awareness Month. So it's a national gathering, Indigenous Disability and Wellness. And we're hoping that we'll have good attendance. Our last conference was a great success, and we're looking for participation from government, from Indigenous communities and leadership, and persons living with disability to all come together to be informed about some of the work of our organization and Indigenous Disability in Canada, and to create new partnerships and new collaborations and help move the disability agenda across Canada forward. So that's exciting and quite busy. We've also been working both with the federal and provincial governments in relation to accessibility. We're still working on the Accessible Canada Act. So the legislation was passed last year, but as it stands right now, there's still some uncertainty as how that legislation will apply to First Nations communities across Canada. So we're engaging communities ongoing to keep them updated on the happenings with the Act and getting their perspective of how, when it comes up for review, it could be modified to ensure that their particular and unique needs are addressed and that they can see themselves in the legislation. So that's exciting. And again, BC is doing its process as well. It's developing new accessibility legislation here, and we sit on the advisory committee with them. So we just had another meeting last week. They just finished the consultations up in November, and they got a lot of good input, and we're looking forward to moving there. So next week, we meet with the federal CASDA board, the Canadian Accessibility Standards Development Organization, to learn a little bit more about what their work they're engaging in right now, and to give them some input on what we're doing. So it's pretty exciting times.
So when it comes to the Accessible Canada Act and Indigenous persons with disabilities, what sorts of outcomes do you want to see?
Well, you know, as we know, you know, there's many accessible barriers within First Nations communities, and that's because of, you know, location of the communities, isolation, funding for programs and services, infrastructure problems, you know, access to water, all those things that we are aware of. Plus, there's, you know, policies and the federal and provincial jurisdictions that conclude things. So there's a number of issues there. So what we'd like to take a look at, what we would like to see, or what we've recommended is that we know that there's some significant barriers in communities and that it would take significant resources to address them all. And I'm not quite sure the government's prepared to do that. But on an ongoing basis, we'd like to see that when things are happening in communities, that the leadership are working with government and working with contracts to ensure that a disability lens is taken, and that any new buildings or new infrastructure, any new programs, has that lens to ensure that we're going forward in a positive way, rather than, you know, just waiting for some changes to the Act.
So, in terms of the conference itself, Are there any myths surrounding Indigenous persons with disabilities you hope to clear up for some of the attendees?
Well, we want to be able to provide an overview of some of the great work that's happening across Canada, not only within our organization, but other organizations as well, and the partnerships and insight that Indigenous communities, persons living with disabilities and leadership bring to the bigger picture. So, I mean, anybody who's interested in how things work within a community or an organization, look at some of the best practices that our sector does, would be great to come, and that will help to dispel some of the myths, like, you know, and we've all heard them, that, you know, their First Nation communities, Indigenous organizations are all funded by the government. They could do pretty much whatever they want. They have carte blanche. That's still a predominant myth. You know, many people could go to school for free, and, you know, they may choose not to. That's a myth as well. You know, the stereotypical things that our communities and our people deal with every day. And so we just want to bring people in. We don't want to focus on the negative. We want to focus on the positive and what's being done, and that will influence attitudes and behaviors, hopefully, for the future.
So, when it comes to the positive side of things, what sorts of successes have you recently experienced in this way?
Oh, I mean, the partnerships and the collaboration with non-Indigenous organizations, because we see now that with here in BC anyways, the government embracing UNRIP and the federal government as well, there's a little more curiosity, and I've done a number of presentations to different non-Indigenous organizations who now are curious about how to better engage communities, how to better engage organizations to ensure that their services are relevant in an Indigenous context, and that they are, you know, starting to develop these true collaborations and partnerships. You know, it's going to take some time. It's relatively new for many. Some have already well within the process. Yesterday, I was at a meeting with Crown Corporation where we sit on the Indigenous Advisory Board, and they too are refocusing on how they deliver services and how they can be more responsive to Indigenous people in British Columbia to ensure that not only are they welcomed into the organization, but the services they provide are responsive and adequate. So it's exciting. It's going to take some time, but it's positive steps forward.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need to keep going forward in this direction, what would you say?
Well, I would just say that, you know, as I always say, sorry, I'm getting a call, and if you hear that beeping, I would always say, be curious, you know, reach out, look for a legitimate partnership, see how you can help communities, organizations, and see how they can help you, because there's a lot of talent out there. There's a lot of great people doing great work. And in order to break down barriers and see how common we are together, although we have differences, you know, you have to take those initial first steps. You can't be afraid. You can't be afraid of culture. You can't be afraid of offending. You have to make those first steps. And that's often hard. So we hope people in organizations will do that.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this. But if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you, Cam.
Of course. In this next segment of our show, we'll hear from Laz Burrows, the Thyroid Foundation. So tell me a little bit about the Thyroid Foundation.
Well, the Thyroid Foundation of Canada is a nonprofit registered volunteer organization that supports thyroid patients across Canada through awareness, education, and research. And it was founded in 1980 by Diana Bramski in Kingston, Ontario, and was the first thyroid lay organization in the world. It's kind of an interesting fact that we've previously all the other thyroid organizations were professional organizations for physicians, and this one was really focused on the patient, the thyroid patient. So we publish information on thyroid disease that's been created and reviewed by a physician, and we provide a variety of news on our website. Our website is thyroid.ca. We produce a newsletter called Thyroid Bulletin for our members, produced twice a year. We have a toll-free number that patients can access. It's 1-800-267-8822. And patients can also email us at info@thyroid.ca.
For those who might not be as familiar with how thyroid disease can affect a person, can you kind of walk me through that?
I can do that. So the thyroid gland is, first of all, a small butterfly-shaped gland at the base of the neck. Thyroid thyroid-stimulating hormone from the pituitary gland and produces thyroid hormones, which are essential to growth and metabolism and regulate body function. So, for example, if you don't have enough of the thyroid hormone in your body, chances are you're going to be exhibiting a number of symptoms, such as poor appetite, intolerance to cold, dry, coarse skin, brittle hair, fatigue, constipation, and poor memory retention. If you have too much thyroid hormone in your body, you will experience weight loss, nervousness, irritability, intolerance to hot weather, excessive sweating, shakiness, and muscle weakness. So these are the standard what you call hyper and hypothyroid conditions that that are exhibited. Aside from that, there is a number of other serious conditions, such as having thyroid modules on your thyroid gland, and there are conditions such as thyroiditis, such as Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is an autoimmune response. Your body basically attacking your thyroid gland and causing you all kinds of problems. And there's Graves' eye disease, which is related to hyperthyroidism. And a small number of percentage of people have this kind of problem, which is quite serious. And there's also thyroid cancer in small percentage of the patients. So typically, who gets this kind of problem? The latest statistics that we have is basically 10% of Canadians age 45 years or older report that they've been diagnosed with a thyroid dysfunction, and the prevalence in women is much higher at 16%. So, and of course, most of the thyroid conditions are chronic. So, I mean, there's typically, for most patients, a solution, but basically you have to take the medication for the rest of your life.
So,
now, if you do exhibit some of these symptoms, you should definitely go see your family physician. If you have a problem with thyroid disease in the family, that's certainly an added aspect that you'd be aware of. And if you do have the symptoms and have the someone in your family has had problems with thyroid disease, you should definitely see your physician. And when speaking to your physician, you should present all the symptoms so they have a better understanding of what the issue really is. So, for example, if you just talk about constipation in case of hyperthyroidism, well, they might not quite understand. They might treat you for constipation rather than for a thyroid problem.
So, in your time with the foundation, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Recently? Well, I can tell you about some of our recent endeavors.
Certainly.
We are establishing an agreement with the Canadian Society of Endocrinology and Metabolism to manage our grants for thyroid research through their awards committee. So basically, they are the primary professional organization for endocrinologists in Canada, and they already have an awards committee in place. So basically, we have some research funds, and part of our objective is to sponsor thyroid research. So we will be giving them grants for thyroid research, and they will be sort of looking for the best possible proposals from different researchers and basically deciding on who's going to get that particular award. So this is supposed to happen this year. This calendar year, so we're quite excited about it, and we're looking forward to that happening.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need for the ongoing work concerning thyroid patients, what would you say?
Well, there's certainly a lot of concern about some of the specific areas that I mentioned, other than the general hypo and hyper. Certainly, thyroid cancer is one of great concern. I think with thyroid cancer, I have a note here that the number one cancer among young people in Canada, diagnosed more than any other form of cancer in persons 15 to 29 years old. And in 2016, it was estimated that 6,800 Canadians would be diagnosed with thyroid cancer. So that's one area. The main thing is awareness. I think what we found through our helpline, through the messages we've received from people, is that they really were not aware of that some of their symptoms were related to a thyroid issue. So awareness is the big item. But we need to spread the message across Canada to make people aware that if they do have these symptoms, they should definitely go see their family physician and get it checked out. So okay. I would say that's the best message at this point. Can I add one more thing?
Certainly.
As an organization, we're always looking for volunteers. And if you have some time, a couple, 3 or 4 hours a week to spare, we certainly would appreciate your support. We're also looking for more members. So that's basically what we'd like to see from the community at large in Canada. So help us out, and we'll do a better job.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Have you ever thought about volunteering with CJAM FM? Why haven't you? Volunteering isn't limited to students. Anyone from the community can come into the station and start their very own program. All you need are a pair of headphones and the enthusiasm to learn. So get involved right here in your community with a topical spoken word show or music program where you choose the content. Email programcjam@gmail.com or come on down to the station. We're located on the University of Windsor campus in the basement of the CAW Student Center. Find out more information about how you can volunteer at cjam.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Neil Boulanger from BCANS and from Laz Burrows from the Thyroid Foundation. In this segment of our show, we'll hear how Ron Ratty modified his own vehicle following a spinal cord injury.
Sure. I did do my own modifications. Karen, what I started with was looking at the budget that I had to spend on a modified vehicle. So I opted to go used. And then again, it was making that decision on what I was actually looking for, what would serve the purpose best for me. And then the nice thing about working for Spinal Cord Injury Ontario was that I had a number of peer volunteers and people that would come back to the rehab facility that did have vehicles, so I could look at their vehicle and chat to them to find out what the pros and cons were. And then I based my decision on some of that information.
So, can you tell me a little bit about your injury in particular?
Sure. I had a spinal cord injury in 1981. I injured my spine at C4, which is in the neck, the cervical area.
So, can you give me an overview of a little bit about the recovery process?
Sure. I spent 8 weeks in acute, and then after the 8 weeks, once I became stable, I was moved to the rehab facility, and I spent 10 months there going through physiotherapy and occupational therapy, learning to become as independent as possible. And one of the things that found with recovery was that I was going to have to use a power wheelchair, so that made things just a little bit difficult in transporting my big chair, right? So I had to look at going with the bigger vehicle, which would have been a van at that time.
So What are some of the common challenges faced with accessible vehicles?
Firstly, finding out exactly what your needs are. I've owned two bigger vans, like a cargo type van. And the difficulty I found with that was is having to sit in the rear or just behind the driver and passenger seat. So I always found that difficult because I never felt like I was part of the conversation whenever I was traveling somewhere. So with the newest van that I've purchased, I get to sit in the passenger side. So now I'm part of the conversation, and I can see where we're going too, which makes it that much better for me.
So what are some of the common adaptations you've seen through your work in Spinal Cord Ontario?
Again, looking at your own abilities and exactly what you want to do with your vehicle, hand controls and remote access, power lifts, power seats, that come to mind right away. And I think, again, you know, there's also that new technology where you can hook up a bracket to somebody's power chair, so it almost acts like a fifth wheel so they can stay in their power chair to drive a van.
So, in your time with spinal cord injury, what's been the greatest success you've seen?
I know I'm a little bit biased here, but I think resources that as an organization we're able to offer somebody that's had an either them or their family member that's had an injury, so that we can show them what, you know, if they're looking at, you know, wanting to return back to driving or look at what an accessible house would look like, we could offer those types of things, and then also the education components as well.
So how do you go about educating the public about spinal cord injuries?
Well, we have a great platform now, an educational platform called CoreTree that our members have access to, and also the peer program. We have a session called Peer Connections that happens once a month, and we invite current and past patients from the community to come out and attend those. And some of the topics that we talk about are, you know, pain management, bowel and bladder management, traveling, sexuality, and etc.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
It is an amazing thing when you're able to adapt something for someone with a disability. But the fact is, you're sending a message to them that they matter, that what they have to contribute to society matters. Being a part of a conversation in a vehicle might be something you just take for granted, you don't stop and think about. But allowing that inclusion, allowing a person to be up front and to share in whatever's going on, it's significant. It's a social sort of basis on which they can say, my opinions and my thoughts are just as valid as the next guy. Really, by creating those little moments, you're creating a firm foundation for such people to take bolder steps, to keep going into, just into the future, really. I mean, if someone today holds the door for someone in a wheelchair, and they recognize this is a sign of their right to access and that they are respected, do you think that message just fades 5 minutes later? No. It's a lasting impact. It's going to a place that says, I want you to go and to learn or to take part in this business or what have you. And the more strength, the more understanding we build up, such people have a right to be here just as much as any group in society, the more they're going to carry that with them, be willing to say, I've taken this bold step before. Why don't I take another one? Why don't I see what else is possible? Fact is, I see society in kind of a precarious position. People at times are afraid to ask those questions, not just of a person with a disability, but of anyone that they're unfamiliar with. We use euphemisms, we dance around what we say, to the point at which we say nothing at all. Fact is, bravery doesn't just come from one side of the equation. It comes from that person who says, I see someone with a disability. I want to reach out. I want to understand them. I don't want to assume. I want to ask a question. I want to say, can you tell me your story? Can you tell me about your condition? That builds a bridge of connection, not just reading some statistical model online that says, your symptoms may be A, B, and C. Yes, they might be. But there is not one medical model on this earth that can factor in the strength of the individual. For that person who survives what the doctor said, there is no chance you're coming out of this. Or the person who walks again when they were told, it's impossible, there's no way. What is it? Are people given a quota on impossible these days? Are they told you have to say this number of cases are impossible? I don't think so. Because the best thing in disability life, in my opinion, is when they overcome those lowball estimates. When somebody says, I expect this much of you, no more, and they blow the roof off the expectations. I just love those moments, you know? Comes at it from a place of, I'm setting a precedent. I'm not doing it because I necessarily want to inspire. I'm doing it because I want to do this for me. I want to prove that my strength is coming from a genuine place. I see the world as hopeful, and I'm going to express that. But the other side is also true. When we impose that glass ceiling on people, and we're not supportive, we don't encourage, we are sending a message that says, you can't do this, you're incapable. It's a falsehood, but it is something a person can be conditioned to believe. The only question is, what messages are we feeding in? By having volunteers in disability organizations, people who put in the heart to modify and to improve things, those are the ones who are making the bravest statements of all, my friends. They're the ones who are standing out and saying, my actions and my ideals are exactly the same. I'm not doing this as a public face thing. I'm not saying I'm going to do all the right things, then go home, kick up my feet, forget the whole thing, and just wait for the next press conference. Just wait for the next moment when somebody's watching. If you truly believe in the potential of not just a person with a disability, but if you believe in the potential of all people, then you truly believe it. It's not a coat you put on when it's convenient, you know. And, well, sometimes it is hard to separate those who have the heart for the work and those who are just putting on a show. But those who really make it a part of them, those who make the cause their own, they can accomplish anything. Modifying a vehicle, clearing up a myth, creating that next treatment, creating that next advancement. It's all about going forward. Sure, we don't have a cure today, but we can take a step towards it. Even if it's a small step we don't think will amount to anything. Sooner or later, you've made some progress. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.